Second hour here, Robbie and Rexrode, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Joe Rexrode here with Junie Riddle in for Robbie today, Michelle Knezovic. And we've been efforting Wes Rucker. I know that Wes told me that he's at Vols football practice. So, I don't know. Who knows? I mean, Josh Heupel could be chewing him out as we speak. I mean, you never know what might be happening.
He could be running drills. We have Wes. No idea.
Yeah. Wes ticks off. Wes gets some UT people fired up sometimes. Let me tell you, that happened during hoop season. But we'll hopefully have Wes. We were going to talk a little bit of Vols. Well, football, basketball, baseball. A lot of stuff going on. In the meantime, Junie, there's still a lot of reaction. You get these quarterbacks going, and people are reacting. We will get back to that on the text line, but I believe we now have Wes or Michelle at least on the phone.
She's chatting it up with Wes. She's probably getting the whole lowdown of, you know, why he didn't answer his phone. But
that could be someone
fine.
Just calling in for a score. Is that Wes? All right, Wes Rucker, Go Vols 24/7. We've got him on the line. Wes, how you doing, buddy?
Doing all right, man. How you doing?
Good. So you're at the football facility right now. Is that right?
Oh, no, I'm getting ready to be. I'm actually at the house, and I'm walking out toward the football facility as soon as I hang up here, because I think they start practice around 8:40, 8:45, something like that.
Gotcha. Okay. So at this point, and I got to say, man, spring football, Junie, I complain about the draft and the NFL stuff. Boy, spring football, oh, it's a tough one. It's a tough one for me. But there's important stuff going on. So anything really significant, Wes, that has hit you so far about these spring sessions with the Vols? I know that the message boards have been just lighting up with Joe Milton stunk in the scrimmage. Anything else of note?
Yeah, I'm with you, Joe, on spring football. I usually like the NCAA tournament lasting as long as possible.
Yes.
For many reasons. One of the main ones is I don't have to pay much attention to spring football as long as they're playing basketball. I think people are making a lot of Milton not having a great first scrimmage, at least to start it. To me, behind the scenes with that program, they can say whatever they want front facing. There's not a quarterback controversy or a quarterback even really competition right now. This is Joe Milton's football team. This might be something you could record as famous last words here in a couple months, I guess. But to me, it's always felt like Milton's football team behind the scenes. People think it's Joe Milton's football team. I think Nico, to his credit, has done a good job of coming in there and being okay with the tempo and understanding some things and picking some things up pretty quickly. But like when you walk in that complex every day, you just don't think it's anything but Joe Milton's football team. So we'll see. And then beyond the quarterback, I think they're searching for some things up front offensively. That's not a surprise to me, since you've got guys like, Darnell Wright and Jerome Carvin who aren't there, and you're replacing a couple guys. But I think as far as these things go, I think they feel okay about where things are.
Yeah, to your point, I'm totally with you. I think anyone who has paid attention, agrees with that, has to understand that. And yet, I just feel like Wes, and this is what I think Joe Milton is well equipped to handle this and ignore this. But seriously, two straight incompletions this fall, and the noise, I believe, from some fans. It doesn't have to be a majority of fans, but it can still be loud. I think it's just going to be overwhelming. Am I overreacting to that?
No, you're not. I think that shows a pretty solid understanding of Tennessee football history and really just kind of college football history in general. I mean, the backup quarterback is always the most popular guy on campus, and then when that backup quarterback happens to be someone like Nico Iamaleava, who fans for a few years now have heard people, including me, suggest that, hey, this might be like a generational type quarterback prospect. When they hear that kind of stuff, of course they're gonna, that's gonna magnify the whole situation. So I do think Milton's equipped to handle that. I think Milton, when he took over late last season, was in a situation where, again, a lot of people, because of that first year, they had sort of given up on the kid already. And he knew that. He knew there were some people who felt a certain type of way about him. But his teammates didn't feel that way about him. His coaches didn't feel that way about him. They've always had tremendous belief in him and the attitude he comes with every day, as hard as he works, that big infectious smile he's got, that huge arm. They've always believed in Joe. Like, that's never been in question. So the people inside the building, I think they feel really good about Joe Milton. The only thing is, they know the difference. When a play breaks down, Hendon Hooker could just kill you with his legs. Joe Milton is a good athlete for a guy that size, and he can run fairly well. He doesn't run like Hendon Hooker does. So that's always going to be one component that's just going to be a little bit different, but, you know, when he's in there. But if you watch the Clemson game, they were all right.
We're talking to Wes Rucker from GoVols 24/7. Wes, you had just mentioned Hendon Hooker, and Joe and I have been having this conversation all morning about this year's quarterback prospects. A lot of some of these draft experts have been sliding Hendon Hooker into the late first-round conversation. Number one, do you think Hendon Hooker is a prospect that is warranted to go in the first round? And number two, do you think that he stacks up well against the rest of this quarterback class?
Yeah, I've always been someone who said that my opinion on these things doesn't matter nearly as much as, like, the general managers who are going to take these guys. But for what it's worth, I have said for a few months now that Hendon Hooker was going to go right back up these draft boards by the time the draft came around, and there were two reasons for that. One, people were going to start doing a really deep dive on his film from last season and realize, oh, my God, look how good this is. And second, most importantly, they're going to sit down and talk to the kid. And the second that you sit down and talk to Hendon Hooker, it could be about football, be about something in life in general, you come away from that conversation just about every time saying, I want that guy leading my team. He's just that kind of a personality. The way that he carries himself, the way that he cares about, like, the public image of not just himself but his team, the way that he works like a maniac pretty much every single day. Like, he's got that QB1 persona or mentality, I think, and it naturally comes to him about as well as I've seen. And I think when you go back and look over that film, and then you compare it to, like, Richardson and Levis and some of these other guys, I don't know why you wouldn't want to rather have Hendon Hooker than those guys. And I probably saw Anthony Richardson on the best day he could ever have, sort of feasting on that porous Tennessee secondary. So I think those guys could be good quarterbacks. I don't know if they will be, but they could be. But Hendon Hooker, I don't have a lot of doubts about his ability to succeed at the next level. I think he'll need a transition time like anybody else. But the amount of processing you have to do in the Tennessee offense, it's different, obviously, because you're sometimes looking at half the field and some of these other things. But the amount of work mentally that is put on the quarterback in a hypo offense, and the quickness with which he has to make those decisions, and his ability to do all that and then throw all of those dimes that you saw all last year, I just don't know if the knee's okay for the long run. I don't know why you wouldn't take him, and I don't know that you'd care that he's 25 years old. I mean, we're seeing all kinds of late 30s quarterbacks now in the NFL. That doesn't seem to really be slowing them down. So, I would have no problem with the team taking Hendon Hooker in the first round. But, again, that's not my job to make. And if somebody takes him in the second or third or whatever, we'll see. I don't know.
Last thing for you, Wes. Just I wanted to go back to the other sport that we just wrapped up, Rick Barnes' program here. Without knowing exactly, you know, it's all the way too early top 25s. I see the Vols sneaking in lower ends of some of those. But what do you anticipate in terms of the roster? You know, do you think Julian Phillips ultimately ends up back in Knoxville? How good do you think that next year's team could be?
Yeah, this is always funny because I've always laughed at way too early top 25s. I've thought of them on my own end, but with the portal these days,
yeah,
it seems like impossible to project, like, what – I mean, because just one or two players can mean everything at this level. And I think Phillips, when you look at his game, you would say obviously he needs to come back. But if someone's going to take him in the first round, he should go. So I don't know. That's going to depend on what scouts are saying right now. I know some scouts are still really high on him. Some aren't as high. to me, he looks like a player for the eyeball test. You're like, you need to come back. But I've said that before about guys who left and got taken in the first round. So I don't know. I just think it all comes down to that team needs kind of a mental detox the next couple of months before they really kind of start getting into off-season work and other things, because that team last season was just worn down by the end. And I think it's a credit to them that they came pretty close there to the Elite Eight. They made that Sweet 16 run. They played that well against Duke. But early on in the season, really going into the season, they started with injuries. The injuries never stopped. Guys got healthy. Guys got hurt again. Guys got hurt healthy again. Guys got hurt again. And that and the expectations placed on them and the sort of conversation about are they really this good, that impacted that team. By the end of the season, that team was just mentally all over the place, I think. And I think they were trying to win for each other. They were trying to do some good things. But they just kind of – Zakai Ziegler kind of was the glue holding that thing together. And when he goes down, I think it just really, really, really – it was the most frustrating part in a season that had a lot of frustrations. I think it took a toll on them. And I think those guys would do well to just, like, not look at a ball for a couple of weeks and just kind of, you know, detox. But after that, I think they get back on the horse. We'll see who comes back, who doesn't. As long as Rick Barnes is there, they're going to be competitive. Every single year, they're going to be competitive. Now, will they ever get past, like, the Sweet 16 level? I don't know. They haven't done it yet with him. But they have the talent most times to at least make that a possibility. So I think they'll be back. I mean, I hope that they finally take a look at their offense and make some needed tweaks and some personnel stuff and let some guys kind of open up and be free and be themselves offensively. They got a lot of questions, a lot of things to work on. But as long as Barnes is there, they're going to be relevant. They're going to be competitive and they're going to be in the mix. There's no question about that. It's just a matter of do they get the guys from the portal that are going to really make an impact? Do they get a couple guys to come back who maybe wanted to go pro? If they can do those things, hey, they could be really, really good. But I don't know. I would suspect by the time their roster gets put together, Joe, I would imagine they'll be preseason ranked. That's just a guess. But what will they do with it? I don't know.
Wes Rucker, Go Vols 24/7. Thank you, my friend. Say hi to Bazooka Joe for us today.
Anytime. Will do, man. You know that.
It's Wes Rucker, and when we come back on Robbie and Rexer, we will react to a little bit of that and look ahead, even though, as you just said, it's hard to look ahead, but we're going to look ahead anyway a little bit in college hoops. Robbie and Rexer, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rexer, Junior Riddle in for Robbie, Michelle Knezovic. You know, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook Live every day. Video streaming brought to you by Superbook. Also, tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball today at 12.05 p.m. on 94.9 The Fan. The Sounds take on the Memphis Redbirds, AAA affiliate of the St. Louis Cardinals. Sounds Baseball, 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Family Leisure. And we're talking, a little college hoops. Wes, yes, Michelle's. Okay, so Michelle, first of all, yeah. I know that you put on the grid. You want to make your point that UConn's a blue blood. Is this something that like would like get Junie fired up, or you just want to make the point that UConn's
no?
A blue
I
blood?
Just okay. I think I started talking about it yesterday, and then I was like, Joe doesn't think they are. I mean, you know, when you look at UCLA, they won their last championship in '95, and I understand what
I don't consider them one either.
So you consider so it's Kansas, Kentucky.
Duke and North Carolina.
And UConn just surpassed Kansas for amount of national championships.
Yeah, I know. It's wild. I mean, you can make the case for UConn for sure. You can make the case, like, UCLA had the most dominant run ever.
Ever, which will never be done again.
Right. I mean, you had two of the best big men ever back when everybody played through their fourth year and they just killed everybody. And John Wooden and all that. But yeah, to me, there's also a level of consistency that has to be a part of it, and UConn has not had that, you know? And that's, I mean, like, every year you know you're going to see, well, pretty much. Now, Kentucky's had their dips here and there in the NIT years, right? But those, it also kind of goes to me, it's tradition, fan base, I mean, all of it. Like, in Kansas, there's nothing bigger than Kansas basketball. In the state of North Carolina, there's nothing bigger than college basketball. It really isn't. And, you know, they have pro teams there. They have, I mean, NASCAR is big there, but there's nothing bigger than college basketball. Kentucky, I mean, it goes without saying, right?
Yeah.
So that's also part of it. And look, I mean, it's, I'm not saying that UConn doesn't have a great fan base and all that stuff. It's been an incredible run. To win five titles, you can't take that away, but I still don't put them on that same tier with those programs. That's just me.
No, and I understand the missing the tournament year in and year out. But, I mean, if you look at – because we only really talk men's when we discuss this. And a lot of what I talked about yesterday with Chase was, you know, the women's game wasn't quite there a while ago. You had only a few dominant programs. But, I mean, if you look at men's and women's now, the most dominant program across the board.
Easily.
And I was talking about this yesterday. Like, when you think of UConn, you think of basketball. I mean, you think of the school – far smaller than a Kentucky, than a Kansas, you know, Connecticut itself, like you're near like New York and things like that. And I understand, you know, like market size and things like that. But I think about Kansas, like, what do you have there? You have college basketball. Those are like the pro sports there. You have Kentucky, you have college basketball. You don't have pro sports there. Alabama football, you know, Duke, what, like, right, what's around there and things like that. So I play that a role into that. But I understand the consistency. You can't constantly make the tournament. But, I mean, the championships. I just think what they've done, we don't talk about them like that. And I think it's definitely a conversation maker.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth a conversation now when you win this many titles. I mean,
I would say UConn is a blue blood, in my opinion. I think everybody has their definition of what a blue blood is.
And how big are you allowing that group to be, right?
Yeah. I for me personally, I think if you are a primarily a basketball school, which is hard to find in today's college athletics because, you know, most people want to be, you know, in that money-making realm of college football. I say if you are a primarily a basketball school, you have a consistency of winning, you have national championships to your name, and you have a program that people identify as like a premier basketball program. That kind of makes you – like, I know you're going to hate this, Joe, but I kind of loop Michigan State in that conversation. Like, when I think of Michigan State, I think of college basketball. I think of Tom Izzo. I think of Magic Johnson from back in the day, you know, from what my dad had talked about as one of the greatest college national championships ever in – what was that, 79?
Yep.
I look at schools that really put into their program and that are contenders year in and year out. I would put Michigan State, a Villanova. I would argue with Michelle to the end of my days that Louisville would be considered one of those programs.
See, all those programs,
I would say
to me are the next tier. They're the next tier, right? Yeah, they're right below. Syracuse, I think, has been that.
Yes,
mm-hmm. You know, Arizona,
Villanova.
You just said Villanova. Yeah. Oh, you did. Yeah, I think that's the next tier. All right, I did, I swear, we're going to get into, I do want to talk real quickly just about outlook on some local teams moving forward. We can go, there's a lot of them, a lot of interesting moves, including Belmont actually getting a big gain. But in the meantime, should we give tickets away, Michelle?
We will give them away at the end of the next break.
At the end of the next break. Okay, so I'm going to just give you a little All-American Rejects, so get ready for that. But we'll be back, talk more college hoops, Robbie and Rexo, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Show. You know what? Let's do the tickets. Let's do the tickets right now. How about third caller? If you'd like to see All American Rejects Municipal Auditorium on August 25th, those tickets go on sale Friday at 10 a.m. But you can win a pair right now if you're caller number 3.
615-737-1025.
There we go. Thank you. Thank you, Michelle. And welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Show. Junior Riddle in for Robbie. In the game studio, sponsored by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. And we're talking college hoops. So, first of all, to Wes's point, Junie, the way too early top 25s, I've always liked them. I've always enjoyed them. In the last few years, they have been, they're so meaningless right now. Because you always had, like, uncertainty about NBA decisions. But now it's just, I mean, who's getting in the portal? I mean, look, the Vols did not want to lose Olivier Kamwa, okay? They did not. Now, a lot of times guys get in the portal. I think a lot of the Vanderbilt guys who got in the portal, it's sort of like, yeah, it makes sense when you think about minutes and playing time and things like that. Kamwa in particular, not a guy the Vols wanted to lose, and I'll be interested to see where he goes. But, like, these things are going to continue to happen. Malik Dia, by the way, leaving Vanderbilt. That's one that I think was a loss. I really like him and his upside, but he goes to Belmont. So Belmont gets one back. Belmont loses Destiny Wells, point guard, who is a tremendous player, to Tennessee. So a lot of movement, and it is hard to project. I mean, I don't know. Is Louisville in any of the early, way too early top 25?
They are absolutely not after this season.
I think we can feel good about not having them in there.
Well, pump the brakes, Joe. Pump the brakes, Joe.
You're going to tell me how Louisville's going to be good next year. I love this.
They got this kid. Again, I don't know his name. I'm not going to lie to you, but he's a 7-foot center that they got that reclassified. He's like a top 10 prospect going to be playing for them. They got a transfer from Illinois, a guy that was normal 5-star recruit. So they're going to have a better team. I definitely think they're going to be much better, much competitive team than they were, because they were just, I mean, they might have been one of the worst Division I programs, mid-major. Power 5 school. I mean, they were awful this past year, like unwatchable for me. But they should be better next year. But don't sleep on the Cards.
And what about just the Kenny Payne? I mean, what do you think about just the coaching situation?
Kenny Payne. As of right now, I'm not a fan. Something was pointed out earlier in the season, and they started off the season losing to Bellarmine, Appalachian State, and then Wright State. Those were the three losses that began their season. Great way to kick it off. And one of the reporters up in Louisville mentioned how in warmups that the Cards team was just throwing oops and dunk contest-esque, while, you know, the opposing team that was, you know, mid-major team, so over there, you know, stretching and organized and not being as a flamboyant team. And they got the job done. I don't know if Kenny Payne brings the discipline and strikes the fear in the young players to get them motivated like other big time coaches would.
Junie, no, that's so true. He was always known at Kentucky as Cal was bad cop, he was good cop. Like, he was the guy who would be like, help these young kids. Cal was like, you know, like good parent, bad parent. And he's also never coached. He's never been a head coach of a big-time program. He's always been an assistant.
He's going to get...
They got Sky Clark. He is the Illinois transfer.
Yes.
He's a stud.
Sky Clark, and then that big. But, you know, they're working. But, you know, I'm not a big advocate of Kenny Payne at the current moment. He's got to prove himself.
So Tennessee and Vanderbilt, like I said, Tennessee's showing up in some of these, way too early top 25s. But, I think Vescovy's gone. I think Plavsic is gone. Josiah Jordan-James is that's an interesting one. You know, I do think it's possibly come back, and it would be a big deal. They will have Zakai Ziegler back, but, I mean, it's not like he's going to be all ready to go right when the season starts, and it's still an ACL. So, I mean, you're talking about a couple months into the season before he's maybe even playing. Jemiah Mashak, I think, is really going to be a good player for them. And they've got a good class coming in, but – I don't know. I think this could be a step back year for them. And I think, I mean, when I look on paper, I think Vanderbilt on paper could be a better team than Tennessee, again, on paper, going into next season. I mean, we'll see. But as of now, you know, Tyron Lawrence is going to check it out with the draft, which I think he should do, but I think he'll ultimately be back. And then you're talking about Mannion and Lawrence. That's a really good backcourt.
No, I totally agree. Now, Tyron Lawrence, I'm on the same page with you. I think he's kind of entering into that NBA conversation a little bit too soon.
He should go get evaluated. I mean, I think that it's a smart thing to do.
Well, he's a 6'6" guard that, you know, that can shoot. He's got the size, he's got the versatility. He can make big shots, as we've seen this past season, hitting the buzzer beater against Tennessee. I mean, the guy stepped up, and he was probably the best, you know, playmaker, isolation specialist that Vanderbilt had when they needed a bucket and you know, they needed somebody to come up and create a shot. He was the guy to do that. I know Ezra Mignon, excellent point guard, but, you know, with the backcourt, if those two do come back, I mean, that's going to be a huge, huge get for Vanderbilt going into next year. And I would agree with you that on paper right now, they're looking like that they're going to have the better team than Tennessee.
Yeah, big thing is, you know, Lee Dort. No, Noah Shelby gets in the portal. A lot of people immediately thought Lee Dort would follow him. They were high school teammates, are kind of a package deal in recruiting. But you see that sometimes where – where guys split, you know, after college. The bottom line is Mannion coming back and Paul Lewis got minutes over him. And Paul Lewis is good. Paul Lewis has a chance to be really good. He was kind of a late add to the class. You just never know. I mean, Shelby came with a lot of hype and a high ranking. Paul Lewis did not. Paul Lewis right now is a better player, but Lee Dort is a huge – I mean, right now there's nothing on him getting in the portal. If he's back, that guy has to get in shape without question. And he's not going to be like what Liam Robbins was, you know, this last year. You're talking about SEC Defense Player of the Year and a guy who could go out and stretch the defense and shoot threes. But Lee Dort has a ton of talent. And so if he now becomes a kind of a key cog inside with Quentin Melora Brown back and some of their other support guys and guys coming in.
Colin Smith,
too. Could be pretty good. Colin Smith is going to be a very good player. And then, of course, you have to start better. You have to win more of those games and all that stuff. But I think they're being positioned to do that.
Well, I want to pose this question to you, Joe. And based off of Vanderbilt's turnaround of their season this year, do you think that gave Jerry Stackhouse a lot more credit to where it's going to be easier for him to bring in recruits and people in the transfer portal to be able to beef up this team even more? Do you think that it was noticed around the nation that, you know, Jerry Stackhouse and Vanderbilt could be a good destination for a veteran to go and play for?
Yeah, I think actually some of the stuff that has helped Rick Barnes, you know, Rick Barnes, who obviously has been a very successful coach for a long time, a lot of different programs, Providence, Clemson, Texas, you know, now Tennessee, but I think Rick Barnes early on in his tenure, Tennessee fans were not into it, and his recruiting classes were like, what is this? Who is this guy? And you get a guy like Grant Williams, who to me is just a tremendous example of, I mean, player development. I think it's always still more credit goes to the player than the coach, in my opinion. It's that guy works, but coaches get the credit for it. And there is something to be said for developmental programs. And I think that's the growing reputation for Stackhouse. It's interesting because to me it's like they're similar, even though they're very different schools and profiles and all that stuff between Tennessee and Vanderbilt. I think the coaching, I think the conversation around the coach is kind of getting similar, and it should be, because if you look at how much guys improve consistently at Vanderbilt, it's pretty impressive. So that is what I think helps you. But also, you need to make the NCAA tournament and get in those games, get on that platform, you know, and they had a chance to do it this year and they didn't get there. So that's the next step. But yeah, I mean, I think that's a thing. I also think that if Stackhouse has success at Vanderbilt, the reality is there's going to be talk about him for other jobs. There's going to be talk about him for NBA jobs. You know, I still think that Jerry Stackhouse could ultimately end up being a longtime NBA head coach.
Really?
Yeah. No doubt.
I think that makes sense just because he was such a good NBA player he would gain the respect of the players at that level.
Well, and he was – I mean, look, he's a good basketball coach. I mean, he won a G League title. He's been an NBA assistant. So, yeah, I mean, he's had a high level of success in the league. So, you know, maybe he doesn't want that. I don't believe that he will be UNC's coach long term. You know, I, from what I understand, I don't think so. But, you know, that if that opens up at some point, and then there's other jobs too. It's like, you know, Vanderbilt, are they in position to keep a coach who's having success? If Clark Lee has success in football the next few years and all of a sudden they're winning 6-7 games, is someone coming for him? You know, now he's an alum, so that may be a little bit different. But no, I think the portal and the recruiting. And by the way, Isaiah West coming in next year for Vanderbilt, I think he's going to be a really good player too in the recruiting class. I think there's definitely a growing buzz.
No, I mean, I would definitely agree. I would say right now that Vanderbilt has the edge. I just think when you look at Tennessee, you know, losing, you know, Vescovy, Zakai Ziegler coming off the ACL, trying to get back into form, I would say his speed and his lateral movement is kind of what makes him special, getting up and down the floor so quickly as he does. It's really going to come down to Meshack and if he can kind of take that next step and really become that second, third primary scorer for Tennessee. You know, Rick Barnes is always going to bring in good recruits, but it's all about if they can come in and they can mesh and they can stick around and actually develop into making them a good team. But, I mean, if you're asking me today, about which team is going to be better in the SEC, you know, barring Tyron Lawrence going to the NBA, I would say right now that Vanderbilt has the slight edge with all the turnover that's going down in Knoxville.
Preds fans, hang out tomorrow night before the Preds game at Superbook Lounge and Landshark Bar and Grill, Margaritaville on Broadway with 1025163 game. Place your bets with Superbook. Enjoy great food and drink specials. Plus, enter for a chance to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. And coming up next, it's the Rex Rant.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN, 102.5 The Game, and the Game Nashville app.
You know, obviously they made some plays. We had a hard time staying in front of them at the end of the day. I'm just sick and tired of our guys getting smashed down there. Smashed! Oh, we'll get ready to play Tennessee. We were incredibly outmanned at the end. Had four guys on the bench in foul trouble. Joke!
Auburn head coach Bruce Pearl joining us.
So beautiful. So beautiful.
Bruce Pearl never seems to fail.
eternal entertainment from Bruce Pearl. Actually, to start this, Michelle, do you have the other sound? Let's just go ahead and play. Let's play Caitlin Clark. So this is Outside the Lines, Iowa guard Caitlin Clark from Outside the Lines yesterday, asked about the Angel Reese controversy.
Yeah, you know, I don't think Angel should be criticized at all. You know, no matter which way it goes, you know, she should never be criticized for what she did. You know, I'm just one that competes, and she competed. So I think everybody knew there was going to be a little trash talk in the entire tournament. It's not just me and Angel. So, you know, I don't think she should be criticized. Like I said, LSU deserves it. They played so well. And like I said, I'm a big fan of hers.
There you have it. Caitlin Clark asked about the Angel Reese. What do you call the hand center? Like, John Cena, I think, developed this, right?
You can't see me. You can't see me.
I mean, I used to love doing that, actually, on the hoop court. You know, just like when that was really big. I think that was like big in like 20. It's kind of a throwback, right? Like it was kind of really a thing in like 2017 or something like that.
Oh no, way earlier.
Or way earlier than that?
I mean, from somebody that watched 12. From somebody that watched wrestling like as a kid and grew up in that John Cena era. I mean, he was doing that back in 04, man.
Was he?
Like, okay. That was like an 04 to like 2010, kind of fell off around then, but I guess, you know.
Yeah, so Caitlin Clark kind of brought it back and was doing it to people and talking trash, and she is a trash talker. And the crazy thing about all this, guys, is like, again, we celebrate. Like, Larry Bird's trash talk is legendary. Michael Jordan's trash talk is legendary. Tom Brady. Go down the list. I mean, trash talk is – you can dislike it if you like, and I understand that. Look, as a parent, there's times when I'm like, you know what? Can you guys just celebrate with each other and be happy with your success rather than make sure the other team feels bad about it? So, like, I've been on that side of it, but at the same time, it's be totally hypocritical of me, because when I could actually play basketball, I talked copious amounts of trash to people. It's part of the fun of the whole thing. And so Caitlin Clark does that a lot. I mean, you're Louisville, Haley Van Lith, you know, shut up, you're down 15, whatever she said to her. I mean, it's like, this is what she does. And so the reaction to this, I do wonder, and I guess I hope, that the people who were screaming at Angel Reese like she committed some kind of, significant crime here, like heard Caitlin Clark like, yeah, what, huh? Like, she didn't need a bunch of internet tough guys to come out of the woodwork, especially the internet tough guys who normally like rip women's sports and now are acting like they give a crap about it, you know, to
thank you, Rex Rose.
I mean, get out of here, man. So I've already said get out of here on this, but I just really appreciate Caitlin Clark coming out and like basically almost laughing at the whole idea. It's so stupid. Junie, do you disagree? I'd like to yell at you.
I don't disagree with you entirely.
Okay.
I would say what Angel Reese did was a little bit on the cornier end more than I'm like disgusted by it. I think when you kind of compare the two, the whole, you know, you can't see me thing, Caitlin Clark was kind of like subtle with it. I think when Angel Reese did it and she kind of you could kind of see the mouthing of the remark that she kind of sent to her. You do it once at the free throw line, and then at the end of the game, you're kind of like running around, like trying to find her. I thought it was just a little bit excessive, into the point it's like, okay, like you can obviously that this girl was a little bit in your head. Like, we get it. You want to do that. I think it was just a bit excessive. I don't mind the trash talk. I love trash talk, especially in women's sports. I mean, I've been big on women's college basketball for a while. I had mentioned this to Michelle. I was like, when Shoni Schimmel played for Louisville back in like the 2010 through 2014, that really got me hooked on the game. And then going to multiple Baylor games the past couple years with one of my best friends, his sister played for Baylor. She was an All-American, got drafted number 2 overall a couple years ago, Nalissa Smith. I've really gotten into the women's game over the last few years. And so seeing trash talk and seeing girls go at it is good. And I think that elevates and makes it more competitive. And these narratives are good for growing the game. I just thought when it comes to Angel Reese, it's like, it's not out of bounds to do that. You shouldn't really criticize her. I just thought it was a little bit corny, and it kind of like, she showed her cards that like, oh, yeah, Caitlin Clark was a bit in your head, and the fact that you all won, I thought it was a bit excessive, but nothing out of bounds, Joe. It's nothing out of bounds.
I mean, Dave Portnoy seriously said, classless piece of bleep. I cannot get over that. Of all people to call someone else a piece of bleep.
So, you know, I look at this situation, and the ratings came out of how many people watched this game. Amazing, right? It wasn't even a primetime game. Amazing how many people tuned into women's basketball.
Yeah.
And I look at this, and, you know, people thinking that that was like, oh, how dare, how dare. I mean, if you were to watch the Louisville-Texas game a couple weeks ago, Haley Van Lith and one of Texas players, they almost got in a physical fight in the handshaking line. But it just shows people haven't actually been tuning into women's basketball, and that trash talking, it's a part of the game. It's competitive. It's left on the court. And, you know, I don't understand why people made such a big deal out of this. And I think part of it, too, is people figured out who Caitlin Clark was in this tournament. And she was a big reason of why they tuned into the game. And she became almost America's sweetheart, of everybody loving to watch her and wanting to root for her. But it's like, okay, Angel Reese had, I think, 34 or 36 double-doubles this year. Absolutely incredible. You know, Caitlin Clark broke the tournament record. Like, these are the story, their scoring record. These are the stories that need to be coming out of the women's tournament. Like, all these historic things that were done, right? The TV ratings, Caitlin Clark having the most points ever in an NCAA tournament. Angel Reese, you know, 34 or 36 double-doubles. Kim Mulkey winning her fourth national championship, you know, in a new school in her second year. And it's so frustrating that people cling to this, and this is the main story coming out of an absolutely historic women's basketball tournament, but yet everybody just wants to cling on to, oh my God, you're bad, you're good. And it's like, it's... like, if Draymond Green did that, like, well, actually, he's not a good one because everybody wants to jump on him when he does something like that. But, I mean, if Steph Curry did something like that, people would be like, yeah, Steph, like, you're awesome, dude. Like,
yeah,
like
I mean,
Clay did it the other day, right? They're like, the rings to Memphis. Remember that? Like,
yeah. No, I don't know. Like, is some of it just because it's, like, women's sports and, like, the women should comport themselves? Like, it's like, this is finishing school or something? Like, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's that's like, maybe ooh, with
how
some
dare
people.
You?
I will say this, though. I will say this. As much as we can harp on the negative, you know, people that are coming at it, I think that this is great for the game.
Yeah.
The fact
yeah.
that
we're
it's,
talking
the
about
fact
it
that it's generating so much controversy, and that's what people like in sports. Controversy sells. And Angel Reese doesn't mind to be the villain that you know, majority of people are going to fall in line and like Caitlin Clark because of how, you know, flashy and how great of a player she is. And Angel Reese has now become, you know, that enemy, that person that you can root against. And I think when you have people invested in the level of loving one player and hating another player, it, one, shows how much people are invested in this, and I think it's great for the growth of college basketball. Like, sure, hate Angel Reese, but at least you're tuning in to watch her. I think it's great for the game.
So, unnamed texter, real fast here. Now talk about Angel Reese not wanting to go to the White House because Joe Biden didn't pick LSU. Now, all I saw was that Jill Biden said, let's have Iowa come too. Yay! Which is
and
dumb.
Shout out Caitlin Clark being like, well, that's weird. She, on Outside the Line, she had a comment. She's like, well, you know, I don't think the losers usually ever go. She's like, I'll take an invite any other time, but, like, that's not my place. Like,
I mean, seriously.
Shout out. Puts her in, like, a awkward, hey, you're going to go to the White House? She's like, we didn't win, so no.
Yeah, yeah, like, that's a weird one. But, yeah, good for her. Because I saw their coach also was like, thanks, but But we'd love to have you out to Carver Hawkeye sometime. How about that?
Okay. Yeah, right.
All right,
there you go.
Jill. Appreciate that. All right, when we come back, we're going to have Paul Kaharsky get back into the NFL. Robbie and Rex, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.